Hello, America, and welcome. You are listening to Steppin' Out, the 12-Step Radio Program on the air. I'm your host, Kevin, filling in for Drew. Tonight, we're focusing on alcohol. And if you or someone you love is having a problem with alcohol or drugs, help is available. You can call 1-800-ALCOHOL. That's 1-800-252-6465. Or just check out AA.org or AA in the phone book. Or if you want to connect with us at the show, it's steppingoutradio.com. Tonight, we're going to talk with Dorothy, who's got 25 years in recovery. Now, that's an amazing story. Anybody out there, you know, has a problem, it's hard just to make one day. But for somebody who's done 25 years, and tonight she's going to tell her story and tell the secrets of how you exactly do that. Hello, Dorothy, and welcome to Stepping Out.
Hi, my name is Dorothy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hello, Dorothy.
And, you know, there is no secret to doing 25 years, but there are lots of things that I had to learn to do one day. To not pick up a drink one day at a time. I had my first drink when I was 16 years old. I went to the theater with my best friend and her father, and it was to see My Fair Lady. And her father took us out to dinner first. And at dinner, he ordered champagne cocktails. And it was a glass of champagne, and the bottom of the champagne glass was a sugar cube. I still remember to this day looking at the sugar cube that was dyed three different colors. It was like pink and white and a greenish color. And I remember thinking, why did they put this in the glass? And we had champagne cocktails, and we had dinner, and then we went to the theater. I do not remember the first act of My Fair Lady. I was in a blackout, gray out. I remember the second act, but I don't remember hardly any of that first act. It's very much a blur. And that was the first time I drank, and I was later to find out after I got sober that what that was a blackout. And what is a blackout? A blackout is where you're walking and talking and doing things, but you have absolutely no memory of it. And I had no memory of that first night of drinking. I didn't drink alcoholically after that for a while. I would have an occasional drink out with friends or something like that, or at a party. But I didn't drink that much until I went to college. And when I went to college, I went to a small Catholic college in upstate New York. I desperately wanted to be a nurse, and this school offered a four-year program in nursing. And what I didn't know when I went to the school was that it was very well known for the amount of drinking. There was a lot of boozing going on. And I loved college from the minute I got there. I didn't just love the drinking. I liked everything else. I liked the extracurricular activities. I liked what I was studying. I liked my classmates. It was a tremendous amount of fun. We had a really great time. But every weekend, we would drink. We would go out on Friday night, and usually on Saturday, there was a basketball game followed by what they called a social, which really was kegs of beer, bottles of beer someplace where we could all dance and hang out. So my drinking in college for the first couple of years was Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. My third year, we usually went out one night in the middle of the week, like Wednesday night. My senior year, we drank a lot more, maybe four or five nights a week. And by my senior year, the weekends were, I spent them in oblivion. I was forever, you know, going out, driving people places and coming home and not remembering where I had left the car. I would have to call people up and say, you know, do you remember where we parked the car last night? I can't remember where it was. And I thought it was just so funny that I couldn't remember where my car was. And sometimes it would be a mile away, 2 miles away. Sometimes it would be right in front of the building. But I would have no idea where I had left the car. And, you know, a few times I'd get up in the morning and I'd go out and I'd look at the car and make sure I hadn't had an accident, because I would have no idea of what had happened. It's a miracle that I never killed anyone, that I was never in a bad accident. I don't know why my friends got the car with me in the condition I was in, unless I just could carry off the drinking that well, but I was drinking like a fish and driving. I graduated from college and I got a job in New York City, lived with a friend of mine, and we both we shared an apartment. We both started on our careers. Was a fun time. I'd always been interested in acting, so I auditioned for and got accepted into an acting school here in New York City. It was quite prestigious. Had a wonderful time in the acting school. And since I was a nurse, I could work all kinds of odd hours and still study, do scene studies, go to the theater, and support myself. So the nursing enabled me to do a lot of things that I had always wanted to do. I love the acting school, and I love the people I was involved with there. But it didn't take me long before I realized what the director had said to me. You know, you do have talent. You could have this career if you wanted it. And I said, oh, really? And I got into some classes and some scene study, and I realized, well, I may have some talent, but these other people, they really have talent. And I was in classes with people who were incredibly gifted, and they were also very, very motivated to pursue the theater as a career. And I was not that motivated. It wasn't that important to me. I was having fun, and everything I did, I was like, oh, yes, it's fun. I'll do it. So I was doing the theater thing, and I was working. I loved the work I did. I can't say I was one of these people who did not like what she was doing. I really did enjoy it. It was a lot of fun. Being you know, educated and young and in a big city hospital was very exciting. There was a lot of social life at work, and I let the acting thing go, and I decided I was going to concentrate on my nursing career. And so I started to go to graduate school. I got accepted to a graduate school in New York City, and I started on a master's degree. And I didn't know exactly which route I wanted to take. Did I want education or administration? In those days, there was not a lot of emphasis on getting a degree in a clinical study. So I was like, okay, I'll do education because it's easy. And I was working and going to school and starting to have a social life in the city with people from work and from school, and then some people I knew from theater school. So I had three circles of friends around me. But the one thing that they all had in common is they all drank. They may not have drank as much as I drank, but this group of people, they drank. And they didn't say anything to me that maybe you shouldn't be drinking so much. They didn't say anything about, you know, gee, you were wasted last night. Nobody ever mentioned anything. But I know that I was drunk a lot. I know I was wasted. I know that I wouldn't know how I got home. I had gotten rid of the car because I knew I could not have a car and live in New York City. And the truth of the matter was I didn't want to drink and drive.
I'm your host, Kevin, filling in for Drew. Tonight we're focusing on alcohol. If anybody out there needs some help, you can call 1-800-ALCOHOL. That's 1-800-252-6465. Or just check out AA.org on the web, or AA in the phone book. If you want to connect with us at the show, we'd love to hear from you. It's steppingoutradio.com. We're talking with Dorothy, who basically started drinking when she was about 16. She went out to dinner in the theater, and at dinner had a champagne that just mesmerized her, and she didn't even recall the first act of the the play she saw. But she really left it there. It didn't really become a problem. She went to college, and she studied nursing and was having a great time. In fact, she was drinking so much she would lose her car, not really remember where it was. But she did graduate. She's working as a nurse, and then she got interested in acting and also continued her education in nursing. So she had three sets of friends. She had the nursing friends, the education friends, and the acting friends. And the one thing they all had in common was drinking. And take it from there, Dorothy.
Well, let's see. So we're now at about 1965 or 66, and I'm doing my thing. I'm working hard. I was very good at my job. I got what you call evaluated every year in this kind of work, and my evaluations were very good. And I was going to graduate school and doing quite well, and trying to have some kind of a social life. But what I noticed was that before I went to a party or before I went to somebody's house for dinner, I had to have a couple of drinks at home because I knew that wherever I was going, I was not going to get as much to drink as I liked. I always brought either wine or scotch or something with me when I went to somebody's house when they invited me for dinner. And I always put a good healthy dent in it. I mean, I brought it so I would have it to drink. I always thought that when people measure liquor before they put it in a glass, use a shot glass to measure it, I thought they were cheap. That was why they were measuring. They were just cheap. My favorite kind of hostess was the one who would say, here's a drink. And then after that, she would say, just go help yourself at the bar. That, I thought, was just wonderful. That was a hospitable, social person. And my drinking was getting worse and worse. And I didn't realize it at the time. All this is stuff that I realized after I got sober, that I was really trying to lead a life drinking and not let anybody know how much I was drinking. I had a lot of friends who were very interested in theater and music and stuff, and we would go down to these little clubs in Greenwich Village or in the West 50s. I mean, I remember seeing a lot of the comedians who are now really, really famous when they were young at these little clubs down in the village. I remember seeing Barbara Streisand do her act before she was a famous person. She became, and just going to these clubs and seeing and hearing these wonderful acts and not remembering leaving the club, sometimes not remembering the end of somebody's act because I was there and I was drinking. About, I guess it was in the 70s, after I finished one degree and I started on another degree, I had a job that I loved. I was a head nurse in a big hospital, in a ward in a big hospital. It was a lot of fun. And I can't remember what exactly happened, but something happened and I decided, gee, maybe I'll take a long vacation and go somewhere. We had a month's vacation. So I decided I was going to go to Africa. I know what brought it on. I just thought of it this morning. Today in New York City was Earth Day. I guess it was Earth Day all over the United States. Today was Earth Day. And I remember it was Earth Day, and I was walking on Fifth Avenue, and there were no cars. And people were just, they were kind of like, you know, this movement to not have cars and clean up the air. So there were no cars on Fifth Avenue. Everybody's walking around. And somehow they're doing to me, gee, see what the earth is like. Maybe I'll go to Africa. So I signed up and I went on a safari to Kenya and Tanzania. Not the hunting type. The only thing I used was a camera. And I went on this safari for 3 weeks. I had a great time, saw lots of animals. But I remember an incident very clearly. And the, you know, we would get up in the morning and go out in the car looking for game, then go back to the lodge, have lunch, sleep a little while, then go back out again, then come back, and then have dinner in the evening, go to bed early. And the reason you went to bed early is you got up so early. We used to go, like, on this trip, we were up at 5 o'clock every morning to go out and look for animals. And I remember being in the game lodge one night, and I was drinking with the guides and the drivers, and I had another drink, and one of the guides said to me, "Dorothy, you know, be careful when you go out to your cabin because you've had a lot to drink. Make sure you don't wander off, because if you wander off here, you could end up in serious trouble." And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, not thank you for the advice, not yes, I'll be careful. I was thinking, doesn't he have a nerve? Why just doesn't he escort me back to the cabin and make sure I get there? That was my attitude. Not drink less, not be more prudent about my behavior. It was about him. And why wasn't he more of a gentleman and make sure I get home okay or back to my cabin okay? And that was to become the hallmark of the rest of my drinking. If someone said anything to me, it was really their problem. I didn't have a problem. It was their problem. My drinking escalated in the 70s at a horrendous rate. I started drinking the minute I got home from work until I passed out. And then I would wake up, I would check the clock. Oh, it's, 3 o'clock in the morning. Try and go back to sleep. Then I had to get up and get to work by 7:15 in the morning. It was a terrible treadmill. It was just like being on a treadmill. I was drinking and working, drinking and working. I had gradually gotten rid of most of the people who were in my life. I wasn't seeing my family. I come from a big family of 6 brothers and a sister. I wasn't visiting them that much. I wasn't showing up unless it was a major family event like Christmas or Thanksgiving or a christening, something like that. Then I would show up, but I wasn't visiting my family. I was going to school in dribs and drabs. I wasn't really concentrating that much on it. And I was drinking more and more. I was, drinking anywhere from a quart to a quart and a half of vodka every night. And if I had a class, I would go to the class, and I had pocketbooks that could hold a quart bottle of vodka. And I would buy the pocketbook with the idea that it had to hold a quart bottle of vodka. Pints, half pints were not for me. That was just a waste of money. And I was going to class. I would run out to the ladies' room on the breaks in class or if it was a lecture to have a couple of drinks because I couldn't get through the class without it. Amazing thing about all this is I was doing well on my job and I was doing very well in school. My papers were good. My work was good. They weren't about to fire me. The patients loved me. The doctors loved me. The nurses' aides and nurses I worked with loved me. I don't know how the heck I functioned. It amazes me.
Tonight we're focusing on alcohol. If you or someone you love is having a problem with alcohol or drugs, help is available. You can call 1-800-ALCOHOL. That's 1-800-252-6465. We're speaking with Dorothy, who's got 25 years in recovery. And she was, basically functioning. She was a functioning alcoholic, but didn't really know it. She was working during the day, going to school at night, and drinking the whole time. She's going to some clubs and having blackouts. But hey, she was functioning. She actually went to Africa and was advised by one of the guides there, don't go out after you've had too many drinks at night because you can get killed from the animals. And she was really offended that somebody like that would say something to her like that instead of escorting her back. And Dorothy, I think that's probably when you said, hey, maybe I got a problem with this, right?
No, I never thought, at that point, I didn't think I had a problem. I was just like, how dare that person say that to me? But no, I didn't. At that point, I don't think I really thought I had a problem. Although looking back on it now, I know that I did. So where were we? We were talking about the 70s.
You were working during the day.
Working during the day, going to school at night.
Drinking the whole time.
Drinking the whole time. Starting to carry booze with me when I went to class. It was always a great thing with me, a source of incredible pride, that I did not drink in the morning before I went to work. I didn't drink while I was working. I didn't go out at lunchtime for something to drink. However, I know that I drank so much after I got out of work or got home in the evening that I went to work with pretty high blood alcohols. I must have. I can't detox that much booze that fast. So I know I always had alcohol in my body, even though I hadn't picked up a drink in the morning. I finished that graduate program, and I decided I was going to quit my regular job that I'd had for a very long time, and I was going to look around for another job. And I quit the job, finished my dissertation, got my degree, and instead of looking for another job, what I did was I sat home and drank around the clock for about 2 months. Just drank and drank and drank. Then I had no money left. And I said, no, instead of looking for a job, maybe I will just go and work part-time as a nurse somewhere. So I went and got a part-time job nursing. And at that point in time, they did not take taxes out of the paycheck if you worked for an agency, which is what I did as a per diem. So I was making pots and pots of money because they weren't taking out any taxes, Social Security, nothing. So I had all this money, and then I would work for a few days, 12-hour shifts, and then I would have a lot of money. I'd pay the rent and a couple of the phone bills, a couple of bills, and then sit home and drink around the clock until I was out of money, and then I would do the same thing again. And this was going on for a couple of years. I would occasionally go on a job interview. I had some people I knew from graduate school would call me up and they'd say, you know, there's this great job opening up and I can't apply for it, but this is right up your alley. Why don't you apply for this job? And sometimes I would go for the interview and I would always find a reason that I didn't want the job, or they would find a reason they didn't want me, whatever it was. None of the jobs paid that much money, which I thought was just terrible, and I wasn't going to take a job that paid less than what I was making. So it was like just my whole thinking was insane. I didn't understand that if I took this particular job, maybe it would be an entree into something better that I did have the education and the training for. Truth of the matter was I wanted to sit home, I wanted to drink, and I didn't want anyone to bother me. I had a routine that I would come home. If I had any booze left in the house, I would drink it. Then I would take the dog for a walk. Now, taking the dog for a walk was not really taking her for a walk. I would take the dog with me to the liquor store where I would buy more booze so I'd have enough in the house. And that was my routine. I had a whole group of liquor stores that I used to go to because I didn't want anyone to know how much I was drinking. I mean, we all know that story. I was doing that. The dog got walked once or twice a day. I had a couple of cats who I sort of took care of, but not very well. In the late 70s, I was working more. I was starting to get sick once in a while. I would have an upset stomach. I would, you know, have headaches. Did I go to a doctor? No. Did I stop drinking? No. I just thought, well, there's something wrong with me, and I should go to a doctor, but I'm not going to go to a doctor. I put one foot in front of the other, and I just kept drinking and working. In February of 1981, one day, nothing unusual had happened. I had been drinking around the clock for days and days. I didn't have any more bills due than I usually had. Financially, things were, you know, the same. There was nothing any worse or any different. I wasn't physically that sick. I was throwing up a lot, but that's what happens to people who drink is they throw up. So I was throwing up a fair amount and couldn't keep any booze in my stomach. And I just went and picked up the phone, called a friend who was a physician, and he thought it was a social call. He'd known me for years. And I said, I'm going to have the DTs. I've been drinking too much and I need to stop. And I know I'm going to have the DTs. And there was this dead silence. And he said, can you get to the emergency room? I said, yes. And he said, go to the emergency room. I'll meet you there. He later told me, he said, I knew you were such a bright nurse and you were such a good diagnostician that if you said you were going to go into DTs, I knew you were going to go into DTs. Put me in the hospital for a 5-day detox. And in that 5 days, the social worker tried to talk me into going to a rehab. Now, here I am, a registered nurse for many years. I had never heard of a rehab for people with alcohol problems. I had never heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know anything about recovery from the disease of alcoholism. I'm not even sure I thought it was a disease. I mean, I knew what it did. I knew about bone marrow problems. I knew about liver problems. I knew about brain rot from alcohol. I mean, I knew all that stuff. But I did not have a single clue about recovery from the disease of alcoholism and how it was possible. So the social worker tried to get me to go to a rehab and I wouldn't go. And he gave me a woman's number and said, call her. She's in AA and she'll help you. And I called the woman. She asked me when I was getting out of the hospital. I told her. And she said, okay, I'll meet you at a meeting. She told me where the meeting was, in Manhattan on the Upper East Side. And she asked me, she said, can you get there? And I said, oh, yeah, I can get there. And I went to this meeting, and I'm one of these people who didn't walk into AA and go, oh, I'm home. Alcoholics Anonymous is just wonderful, and I'm so happy to be a member. No, my reaction was exactly the opposite. I know I have to be here because I have a problem with booze, and I'm going to stay, but I know I'm not going to like it. And all these other people were smiling and happy and shaking hands. And I just felt so out of it. I felt so lonely. I felt so depressed. I felt like my life was over. And what I didn't realize, it was really the beginning of my life. It was the beginning of a new, you know, this, some people say it's a new life. This was the beginning of life for me. I followed this woman around like a puppy dog. I went to all the meetings she went to. If we'd be going, walking down the street, she'd say, now see that door over there? That's the entrance to such and such a church. And there's a meeting there on Friday nights at such and just so you know where it is. And she gave me a meeting book, which in this area, New York City, is very huge. And she showed me how to read the meeting book and what it meant. And that one of the things that either she said or one of her friends said was, the meeting book is the most important thing there is. Make sure you always have it with you. And make sure you know where you're going to go to a meeting. When you get up in the morning, know what meeting you're going to be at that day so that you can, your day is geared towards that. I did that. I went to a meeting every day. I was working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, because I didn't want to be in the apartment. I didn't want to stay home. I was afraid I'd drink because that's where I drank. So I said, I got to stay out of the house. So I went to a meeting every day.
Tonight we're focusing on alcohol. We're talking with Dorothy, who basically was working as a nurse and knew she had a drinking problem when she was called up a doctor friend of hers and said, hey, you know, I think I'm about to go into DTs, the detox, and I need some help. And she went into the hospital, and they were recommending she go to rehab, and then they hooked her up with a person to go to an AA meeting. And when we left off, she was talking about she just started going to those first couple of meetings. What was that like, Dorothy?
Well, you know, the meetings were fine. There was nothing wrong with them, but it was me. And I was so hideously depressed the first year and a half. I found the meetings were okay, but I wasn't happy. I wasn't going out for coffee with people unless my sponsor told me, come on, we're going. Come with us. We're going for coffee. And I didn't know how to talk to people. I was still I had no social skills. I think that was part of it. I really had no social skills. And I was going to meetings. I wasn't drinking. I was going to work. And I thought, well, if the rest of my life is like this, that'll be just fine. I won't drink. I'll go to meetings. I'll go to work. And at least I won't be brain damaged or I won't have liver failure. And I was willing to settle for that. I was very willing to settle for that. And what happened with me was one of the things was I got a home group. I found one group where I really felt comfortable. I went to the same meeting there every single night. I started to meet people. I was at that meeting once, and they said they needed someone to be chairperson of a meeting. And if anyone could do it, see this. This man said, see me at the end of the meeting. And I went up to him and I said, I think I can do that. And in a twinkle, I had the keys in my hand and he was showing me what to do. It was really amazing experience to start to do some service in AA because it made me stop thinking about myself. And I had to think about making sure the coffee was there and making sure the milk was there and somebody read the preamble and do all the little tasks that have to be done to make sure a meeting takes place. And I started to feel part of the group. I also met someone at the meeting who was very involved in service, and he became a really good friend of mine. And he encouraged me to do more service, to do more things. He encouraged me to go to a meeting and then go out with the group afterwards, go for coffee, go for dinner, break down the walls of isolation. And I did that. And it was really important. One of the things in AA is that we talk a lot about, you know, doing service and having the steps in your life, having a sponsor, and all those things were really important. And I was doing service in the group. But in about after I was maybe 7 or 8 years sober, someone asked me to go and speak to a bunch of nursing students about AA. And I did it, and I got a big kick out of doing it, telling them what AA is, what is and what it isn't, because I had never heard of AA when I was in school or as a nurse in a big city hospital. No one had ever mentioned AA. I didn't know anything about it. And I always felt like maybe I could have sent patients to AA or I could have taken myself to AA, but I didn't know anything about it. So I started doing work talking to professionals about AA. It's called cooperation with the professional community. Also became a really important part of my sobriety, and I've been doing it for a long time. And sometimes the questions the doctors ask really remind me of how little I knew before I stopped drinking and how little I knew about AA. And one of the questions the doctors always ask is, well, you know, like I can tell somebody's an alcoholic because they do this, they give physical symptoms. And sometimes they'll ask, how do you know you're an alcoholic? How did you know you're an alcoholic? And, you know, my answer to that is usually if alcohol is interfering with some part of your life, then chances are you have a problem with booze. But the thing that I always tell patients and I always tell nurses when I talk to them is if you go to an AA meeting or you send a patient to an AA meeting, they never have to say their name. They don't have to admit they're an alcoholic. They just have to show up and listen. If they want to raise their hand and say their name and they're an alcoholic, that's fine, that's great. But there are no requirements for membership except a desire to stop drinking. Doesn't mean you have to do anything. You don't have to do any service. All the things that a lot of us do in terms of service and sharing, we've found helpful and very positive. But as a beginner, you know, you don't have to do that. So if you're sitting out there in your car driving around wondering if you have a problem with booze, if you're wondering if you have a problem with booze, chances are you do.
Now you were a functioning alcoholic. I mean, you were going to school, going to work, but just drinking was an everyday part of your life.
Right. I mean, I was drinking too much and I was drinking every day. I don't think it's normal for people to drink every single day. And I was doing it every day, but I didn't have a handle on the fact that that was not normal. When I first got sober, you know, I had a desire to stop drinking. I mean, I really did want to stop drinking and stay stopped, but it was very difficult. And it took me so long in sobriety to realize that that's the disease. And the disease is always going to be here. I think I'm always going to be an alcoholic. I just can be an alcoholic who's not drinking today and trying to live a sober life.
Now, that's the other thing. You got 25 years in recovery. You haven't drank in 25 years.
Right.
And a lot of people would think, even after a couple of months or a couple of years, like, hey, I got this under control. I can stop going to meetings. And a lot of times you fall right back into the same cycle of pain.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of things. You know, one, I go to meetings, so I hear what happens to people who don't go to meetings. That, for me, is a very powerful thing. Somebody says, yeah, I was sober for 5 years, and I stopped going to meetings, and now it's 10 years later, and I've been drinking for 5 years again. So I hear lots of people who stop going to meetings and start drinking. For me, and, you know, this is just my experience has been that I am a happier woman when I've been to an AA meeting. If I go to a meeting, something happens at the meeting. The realization that I am an alcoholic and I choose not to drink today. Meeting other people who are either sober longer than me or maybe they're beginners and just starting on this journey in sobriety. And being able to talk to them and tell them, you know, if you don't pick up a drink, it's going to be okay. You know, you're powerless over alcohol. That's what you have to understand.
And one thing you mentioned was if you do the steps, the 12 steps, the fear and the pain are gone, right? I mean,
yeah, sometimes things happen. I mean, you know, if a car stops too suddenly in front of me, yeah, I feel that fear that I might not stop in time. But that fear that, oh, my God, what is today going to bring? Is it going to be a disaster? Pain about my past and what I did. You know, the steps are there to help us stay away from a drink, look at our past, make amends for our past, learn from our past, and have some kind of a higher power in our life so that we can lead a, you know, happy, joyful life. Yeah, things happen. You know, my mom died. My brother committed suicide. You know, it's like I've been through lots of very bad things. But, you know, they are things that happen to everybody.
And you got 25 years, and it's still for you one day at a time, right?
Yeah, I don't pick up a drink one day at a time. And I try and look on everything that I do from a point of view of one day at a time. Yeah, I know I have to put the money aside to pay the rent. You know, that's sane planning. But I lead my life one day at a time. When I get up in the morning, I say, God, please help me not to drink today. And when I go to bed at night, I say, God, thank you for keeping me sober today. Because I realize that I'm only here by the grace of God. That social worker who gave me that woman's phone number, and she turned out to be such a positive influence in my life and still is, I believe he was sent by some sort of a higher power. For me, the higher power is God. For other people, it's other things. But I think that you know, there is a higher power out there and that he is guiding us all. And who or what your higher power is up to you. For some people, it's Allah. For some people, it's Buddha. For me, it's God. And with the grace of God, I'll stay sober tonight.
Dorothy, thank you for sharing. Congratulations on 25 years. You're listening to Steppin' Out.